Board Game Bros.
Hey, listeners.
Hello.
It's the Board Game Brothers.
Hooray.
I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matt Craig.
We're brothers in real life and brothers in board gaming. We're professional board game designers with our friends Chris and Roger. They have a podcast, but this is our podcast, Board Game Brothers.
Yeah, we're not even going to tell them the name of their podcast.
Yeah, we would never mention Entertain the Geeky on our own podcast.
Yeah.
Anyways, we design board games. We love board games. We've been playing board games for half of our whole lives.
In our whole lives, if you count casual board games.
Or, you know, those little kid board games like Chutes and Ladders or whatever.
Yeah.
So, we love board games so much that we started designing them, and we decided to also start this podcast. On this podcast, we're going to talk about board games we've played. Maybe if you haven't played these board games yet, you could listen to this podcast to get to know a little bit more about them. Maybe you consider it when you're making your purchase. If you have played board games, we're going to dive into the design of board games, why we think certain decisions were made, and why we think certain games are good or bad or whatever.
Yeah.
So, today, we are going to talk about Settlers of Catan.
Or Catan, or, just Catan.
Yeah, recent releases, they've taken the Settlers of portion from the title, and it's now just Catan.
You know, I feel like Catan's a pretty good first game to start off with. I mean, like, everybody knows it almost.
Yeah, many would call it the monopoly of our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Board Game Geek certainly likes to call it that.
You know, it's funny, I think this was both of our first foray into the more open world of board gaming beyond just Parker Brothers style games.
Yep. Certainly for me, Catan was the first Euro game that I ever played, the first serious strategic board game that I ever played. The same for many people, and that is why Catan is considered to be a gateway game. Matthew, tell us about gateway games. What is a gateway game?
A gateway game, best put, is a gateway into the open world of board gaming beyond just what you've grown up with in the public sphere. It's a good introduction to not only gaming, but also a certain mechanic.
So you're saying it's much like a gateway drug into drugs, except it's a gateway game into more games.
Pretty much.
Okay, cool. What other gateway games can you think of?
Well, there's a lot of pretty well-known ones, like Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne. I'd say Dominion's a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Wonders is debated whether or not it's a gateway game, but I consider it to be one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, and we've discussed this, that on this podcast, we'd like to just start out doing episodes on these gateway games. The gateway games will be your gateway into our podcast.
Exactly.
Where we talk about game design. Okay, so without any further ado, let's get into Catan. Let's start talking about Catan. I have a little history here that I'll just go over for you and the listeners, because I know you didn't do any intense research like I did before this episode was recorded.
I woke up today and we started recording.
Yes. So Catan, Settlers of Catan, was made in 1995 by a dental technician named Klaus Teuber.
That sounds right.
Klaus Teuber. He made it in 1995. It was inspired by Viking settlers. He wanted to make a game about settling an island, so he made Settlers of Catan. And the very same year that he designed it and published it, it won the Spiel des Jahres, which is a prestigious German board game award. It said that a successful board game in Germany will sell 30 to 40,000 copies. If that board game wins the Spiel des Jahres, it can expect to sell 300 to 400,000 copies in Germany. And if you look in the past and you see all the games that have won it, you'll probably recognize a lot of the names. They're very popular worldwide, certainly in the U.S. And countries in Europe. That's just a brief history of Catan.
So it's been a bit since I've played the game myself, but I know you played it pretty recently. So how about you explain how to play the game?
Okay, so when you play the game, first you set up the board. You have 19 hexagonal tiles that have either one of five different resources printed on them, or landscapes that represent a resource, or there's a desert tile. You arrange them in a larger hexagonal structure, and then on each tile, you place a little token with a number on it. And that number can range anywhere from 2 to 12. After that, players place settlements and roads at the intersections of these tiles. And then once that's done, the game's set up. On a player's turn, they roll two dice, and whatever numbers show on those dice, anybody with a settlement that borders a tile with a number matching that number gets to collect a resource. The five resources that I mentioned before are clay, wood, stone, sheep, and wheat. And you collect those resources, you put them into your hand, and then you spend them to build more structures. So you can build more roads, you can build more settlements, you can build larger city settlements, and you can build special development cards that let you perform special actions on your turn. The goal of the game is to get to 10 points in the basic version of the game. When you add more players, sometimes the points can change. And the way you get to 10 points is each settlement that you build gives you 1 point. Each city that you build on top of a settlement gets you an extra point. So each city is worth 2 points. And then there's other special things you can do to gain points, such as connecting long pieces of road, assembling large armies, or playing other special development cards. So that's the basics of how to play Catan.
You forgot one thing.
Oh, I did.
Trading.
Trading, yes. I forgot. That's the most important thing about Catan. You can openly trade with anybody, anytime in the game, whenever you want.
There is another thing you forgot.
And there's also the exchanges that you can do at the edge of the... And the exchanges that you can normally do 4-1.
And there's another thing.
What did I forget?
The robber.
The robber! Okay. We'll get into the mechanics, I guess, right now.
Yeah.
So the game uses a couple interesting mechanics and a couple common mechanics. The first being the die roll, which provides a randomness to the game so that it's not set in stone whether or not somebody will win from the beginning of the game. There's always a chance for a comeback in that regard. And then there's the robber, which is a catch-up mechanic.
Slash anti-snowball mechanic.
Sure.
It not only helps players behind catch up, it keeps players ahead from maintaining and gaining an even greater lead.
Okay. And specifically what it does is every time a 7 is rolled, which is the most common roll you can get with two dice, whoever rolled the 7 gets to move the robber onto one of the tiles, preventing any player bordering that tile from collecting resources from it. And that player also gets to steal one resource from the hand of a player that has a settlement bordering that tile. But in addition to this, if you have 7 or more cards in hand when you roll, when a 7 is rolled, you have to discard half of them. So if you are a player who has amassed a ton of resources, who's got settlements on a lot of territories that is giving him a lot of resources, if a 7 gets rolled, you're knocked down a peg, which is good for people who have less fortuitous harvests from their places. Okay, so Catan. We've gone over how it's played. Let's talk about Catan as a gateway game. What makes Catan the gateway-iest of games?
You know, I think one thing you hit on already is the luck aspect.
The luck aspect.
The luck aspect helps players who have not quite gotten used to the Euro style of strategy figure out, like, it helps them, you know, win, basically.
Yeah,
it provides a level playing field for both newcomers and oldcomers.
Right, so if you're new to board gaming, and this is the first time you've played Catan, there is a good chance that you could win, just because there's this large luck aspect to the game. Somebody who's played the game numerous times may still lose to you, just if the dice don't show up for them.
Another thing is the fact that you can get resources not only through the mechanics of rolling dice, but also through straight-up trading with your other players, which allows for multiple types of players to actually just do the basic part of gathering resources and building up their cities and settlements.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you can be a more political player and still be on par with the people that have the settlements on the more likely to roll numbers.
Yeah, if you say forgot to get wood or clay early in the game, then yeah, you could trade for those crucial early game resources with other players, especially if there's other new players who mm-hmm. don't mind a little bit of trading. I know that in some of my games, when we're playing with mostly people who are very familiar with the game, we tend to get a little more competitive and reserved when it comes to trading.
Yeah.
But yeah, newcomers will definitely find help with the trading aspect of the game. Let's see. I would like to talk a little bit more about the visual design of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And how it makes it a good gateway game. Actually, but before I say that, I think one of the biggest points I can make of why it's a good gateway game is there's almost zero hidden information in mm-hmm. the game. Other than the development cards, when you sit down and set up the board, everything is laid out there for you. You have your player card that tells you what the different pieces are and how you build them and how many points they give you. You can see the whole board. You see where the numbers lay. And you can see where other players have placed their pieces. And if you're astute, you can track what resources they've got in their hands and stuff like that. So there's almost zero hidden information, which I think can be a complicated thing for a new gamer to have to tackle. There's very little venturing into the unknown with this game. You don't have to sit there and wonder, you know, what all the possibilities are in the game. They're all pretty much laid out for you, except for the development cards.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the visual design of the game. The game does a lot of things to help you learn how to play it. And one of the things is the numbers on the spaces. So if you didn't know, 7 is the most common number you can roll with a pair of dice. And then the next common numbers are 8 and 6, because they're right next to 7. And the game tells this to you. It doesn't keep that kind of information hidden to somebody who hasn't figured that out yet with this game.
Yep.
When you sit down and play, the number 6 and 8 are larger than any other numbers on the board in recent versions. In older versions, they were bright red. Yep. And everything else was a darker shade of red, or it was printed in black. So that's one example of mm-hmm. how the design. But another example that I would say is, and how the game tells you how to play and how to win, is the layout of the player card. Now, can you remember the order of the developments on the player card, how they're listed?
I'm going to take a guess.
Okay.
Road.
Yeah.
Settlement.
Yeah.
Development card. City.
Okay, you got city and development card mixed up.
Okay, that was the two I was unsure about.
But if you
about.
Think about it, aesthetically, you might want to go road, development card, settlement, and city.
Because that's the increasing number of resources required.
Yeah, because a road takes clay and a wood. A development card takes sheep, wheat, stone.
Mm-hmm.
A settlement takes clay, wood, wheat, sheep, and a city takes 2 wheat and 3 stone. But instead they have them listed road, settlement, city, development card. And you can see, just by looking at that, you probably want to build roads first.
Mm-hmm.
The rules state that you pretty much have to build roads first. And then you want to build cities, and then you want to, then you want to build settlements, then you want to build cities. And then, when you can, throw in a development card.
Exactly.
That's generally the game plan for any player sitting down to play Settlers of Catan. And they listed out step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. It makes it very easy for a new player
mm-hmm.
to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So why else do you think it is a gateway game?
I mean, my main point was the luck part.
The luck part.
But I don't really know otherwise. I mean, the theme is pretty approachable,
mm-hmm.
which is a big deal when it comes to board gaming.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not too fantasy or sci-fi. It's sort of a fantasy history.
It's like a reserved theme. It's mm-hmm. not too outlandish.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't use any crazy characters or illustrations. Most of the illustrations you come across are just the stone, wheat, clay, and sheep.
Right.
I would... So, it's changing from a gateway game being an easy game to understand, mm-hmm. changing from that into a gateway game being an introduction to other games.
Mm-hmm.
Catan is an introduction to territory expansion games. Games where you compete for land as a resource.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very common mechanic and theme in a lot of other Euro games.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any other games that use territory expansion similar to Catan?
Similar to Catan,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of that I have played personally. But as far as land being a resource, Tigris and Euphrates comes to mind.
That's what I was also thinking of, Tigris and Euphrates.
Where the size of your kingdom directly affects your power and being able to expand.
And that's another game where you collect resources, and they're not necessarily resources, they're...
Just different colored points.
Different colored points, but that's another one where you can, if you are astute, you can track them. Where your opponents have placed their pieces and what kind of resources they're gathering. There's some parallels mm-hmm. from there. And Tigris and Euphrates is also a very good game.
Another thing is, with the being astute in tracking resources, going back to Catan, you don't really have to focus too hard. It's almost intuitive that somebody will have more of a type of resource
mm-hmm.
just based on the fact that they'll have more cities or settlements on specific locations.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you can remember, say, the last two dice rolls, you can sort of guess, you know, my opponent might have more sheep because they have a settlement on a six on a sheep.
Mm-hmm. Or they have two settlements on a six on a sheep.
Exactly.
Or they have a settlement on a six sheep and a settlement on a nine sheep.
Exactly. The visual information that you have allows you to sort of infer how the game's going for all the other players.
Mm-hmm. And that ties back to just there being very little hidden information
exactly.
in this game. It's all presented right there, bare for you to witness and comprehend.
Do you have any other points as far as Catan being a gateway game?
Not that I can think of right now. I think we've covered a lot of the important points.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about the strategic depth of Catan, I guess.
Ooh. Okay.
Because I think you've got a couple things. Do you have anything about that written down in your notes?
Most of mine are more balance related.
Balance related.
But I do have to say about the strategic depth, I have one point.
Okay.
So, we mentioned trading earlier, and especially how...
Oh, by the way, I'd like to preface this with... I guess this is kind of an aspect of being a gateway game, is that it's simple to learn, but it has a little bit of strategy that you can discern from playing it. Which is, you know, that's this new realm of board gaming that you're finding your way into, is this... the strategy board gaming
mm-hmm.
Genre, and gateway games introduce you to that with these simple games that have a little bit of strategy that you can figure out along the way. So back to your point.
Okay, so when it comes to trading cards, another point is there are ports on the sides of the board.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a settlement or a city that touches a port, then it gives you a better rate of trading in cards. Now, normally you can trade four of the same type, for one of any other resource.
Mm-hmm.
But ports will sometimes say you can trade two sheep for one of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or two clay for one of anything. And I think that adds a good level of depth to the game. Because your choices aren't necessarily always based around... Or your choices in terms of where you want to place settlements isn't always based around what the best numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
It could be... you want settlements on something that allows you to then move to a port nearby and efficiently trade resources, which also goes back to trading because it gives different players a different value in terms of the economy of the game
mm-hmm.
on each resource. You can say some player who has a port or has a sheep port will find a much more valuable sheep, you know, they'll take more value in sheep than other players,
mm-hmm.
so they can leverage that in trading.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, you know, I'll give you your clay if you give me two sheep. you know, it's a fair trade that way. Which I think that's a big thing, is that there is depth to the economy of the game, mm-hmm. and that partially comes from the ports.
Yeah, I think the existence of ports is also interesting. It sort of awakens the Johnny in you.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you might sit down to a game of Catan, and you may have played it before, and you might think, okay, I know what I need to do. I need to, early game, I need to look for wood and clay and sheep and wheat,
mm-hmm.
to a lesser degree. So that I can start building up my own settlements. And you might think, you know, I'm going to look for the good numbers. I'm going to try to diversify mm-hmm. my numbers a little bit. So I'm not just blanking on every roll and only hitting it on sixes and eights. But then you sit down and the board gets laid out. And then you might see that there is a clay port on the side of the board right next to a clay tile that has a six on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while everybody else might be using your strategy, you might be thinking, you know, maybe I can put both of my opening settlements on that clay tile and on that clay port. And then I can work this really weird clay monopoly type game where I just gain all the clay and spend it for any resource at such a huge discounted trading value. You know,
now you used a term that I don't know if some of our listeners might not know, which is Johnny.
Yeah. I guess we could go over those three terms. The psychographics that Wizards of the Coast developed.
Exactly,
yeah. And those are Timmy, Johnny, and Spike.
Yes.
So I just mentioned Johnny. Johnny is a puzzle solver, I guess you could describe it. He views the strategy of a game is a puzzle that Johnny likes to figure out. And Johnny likes to find new solutions to that strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't do that because Johnny wants to win. He does it because Johnny just finds joy in figuring out the interesting aspects of a game
mm-hmm.
and piecing them together in interesting ways. And then there's Timmy. How would you describe a Timmy?
Now, this is my loose understanding, but Timmy likes experiences in games. Timmy likes to have flashy things or big things. Things that Timmy finds more joy in just the fun, or not fun, but they found more joy in the experiences and the scale of the experiences.
Okay, so they like when the game is taken to the extreme.
Exactly.
And it might feel like they're exploiting a certain part of the game, but they're not doing it because that's how they want to win. They're just doing it because they get a lot of fun in just doing really cool, crazy things in the game.
Exactly.
Okay, and then there's Spike, and I think you're a Spike.
Well, I'm a Johnny Spike.
You're a Johnny Spike, okay.
But Spike wants to win.
Yeah.
And they will do almost anything. They will do anything within the realm of the game's rules to win.
Mm-hmm.
So they will exploit the unbalanced mechanics, and they will cut corners when it comes to certain parts of strategy,
mm-hmm.
so that their main strategy can excel at winning.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of got a Spike vibe from you when you were talking about the trading aspect. Personally, I don't pay a lot of attention to the whole trading in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might try and trade every now and then while I'm playing Catan just to finish mm-hmm. maybe a settlement. If I really need that first settlement and I'm just not getting the resources, I might start bartering with people at the table. But I'd imagine that you might trade a little more intensely being a Spike.
Or attempt to trade more intensely.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's Timmy, Johnny, and Spike. I'm probably a Timmy.
That's fair.
A little bit of a Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. So you talked about balancing issues.
I do have a couple balance points.
Yeah, so Catan is a great gateway game, very simple. It has some strategy, mm-hmm. but Matthew, you sold your copy of Catan.
Yes, I actually sold my copy that I got as a birthday present.
Yeah.
And that's because I just, over time, could not bring myself to want to play the game. Mm-hmm. Even recently, when we found our sister's copy of the game and brought it to the table, I sat aside. Yeah. And that's because, for one thing, I'm not a fan of games that are very playgroup dependent in terms of your experience.
Mm.
And that goes back to trading. Where a lot of times when we would try to induce trades, we've been sort of conditioned to think almost to the point where if we make this trade with the person who's offering, that they'll just win the game on the spot.
Yeah.
That's the way we tend to trade.
And that may be a little bit of my fault. We were both introduced to this game by our friend Cameron, Whenever we, after the first few times that I played with him, I figured out that he was very good at mm-hmm. getting very beneficial trades. And so I almost every time I sat down to play with him and a couple other people who hadn't played the game, I would preface it with, okay, if Cameron asks you to trade, don't trade mm-hmm. with him unless it's just too good of a deal to pass up.
That probably
hurt the game a little bit.
I'm not going to blame the game on that, though. Yeah. I'm going to say that it's a sliding scale of, you know, maybe like just a little bit of a difference in terms of quality of the game
mm-hmm.
as far as what playgroup you play with. A bigger balance issue that I've come to think about more is how important certain resources are.
Okay.
And that, to start off with, if you look at just the little player card you have and all of the different developments that you can build with your resources,
mm-hmm.
wheat appears the most.
Wheat appears the most? It appears on settlements, development cards, cities.
And developments, yes.
True.
Which, now, the thing is, you can't build settlements unless you have roads. And I can't remember, you'll have to clarify, but can you build a city without having a settlement?
No, you cannot. A city replaces a settlement.
So there's sort of an upgrade tree of road, settlement, city.
Yeah.
However, since wheat's used for both settlements and cities, I think it becomes the most important resource in the game.
Okay. Well, that's true. I would counter-argue with early in the game, roads are king.
Exactly.
It's sort of a transition that happens in the middle of the game where roads don't matter anymore, and it starts to become wheat city when you start needing to build cities.
And development cards
yeah.
so that you can make that final push.
Yeah. And maybe it's a thing where maybe with a four-player game, you might have a little more of a balance because people are closer together with their mm-hmm. settlements, and somebody who could build a lot of roads very quickly will be able to cut off mm-hmm. other players from resources. Maybe that's how roads become a little more important, and therefore stone or wood and clay become a little more important in the game. Now,
let me counteract that okay. with the fact that you don't need to build all of your settlements before you build your city. You can upgrade your first two settlements into cities, and that will still give you an advantage.
Okay, so
I just think that the okay. fact that you could pretty feasibly, early on, try to get a lot of wheat, and that will have you set for the rest of the game.
Okay.
Now,
you know, I don't think I thought about that before. A strategy where you just immediately try and upgrade your first two settlements into mm-hmm. cities. That's interesting.
The thing is, it doesn't diversify your dice rolls.
Correct, yeah.
Which I think gets to another point I want to talk about.
Okay.
This is a big part of my game design philosophy.
Okay.
Is luck and luck mitigation.
Uh-huh.
So, almost every game that involves luck, if the point of the game isn't luck, so it's not, you know, a typical dice rolling, press your luck game.
Yeah, it's not Yahtzee.
Or dungeon roll, yeah. like a good one.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't involve that, then the game will have some way to fix your randomness.
Mm-hmm.
Simply put, most role-playing games have modifiers, or in the case of like Savage Worlds, you have better chances of just rolling the target number.
Mm-hmm.
And in Magic the Gathering, you have ways to manipulate the cards in your deck so that you're more likely to draw a good card when you need it. Now, Catan doesn't directly have luck mitigation. You're not affecting the number that you're looking at, but you're affecting how often that those numbers will affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is sort of my problem with Catan, to start off with,
mm-hmm.
is that the luck itself is still completely random.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no way, even if you have all of your settlements on sixes and eights
and fives and nines,
you could still completely be completely screwed out of the game.
Exactly.
Because there's just no controlling. The probability is higher for those numbers, but, you know, often I found myself playing Catan and having some settlements on, say, eights and nines, but sixes and fives are getting rolled more often than eights and nines. And that's just the way it feels. But yeah, I can definitely see the point where luck is king in this game, mm-hmm. and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of ties back to the trading aspect of trading being really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's I guess that's the only way you can stop it, is just to adapt along mm-hmm. the way and hopefully trade for the resources that you're not getting from the dice rolls.
Exactly.
Okay.
Another one is, so with 7 being the most common number on the bell curve mm-hmm. and the robber being on the 7, I'm sort of unsure about how much I like that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because it almost makes the robber happen too often. For one thing, the robber halts the pacing of the game, because it makes everybody count the cards in their hand and then discard the cards, and it makes one player have to decide where they want to move the robber.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost always just sort of slows down the game by a couple minutes.
Okay, well, to be fair, though, the game is very fast-paced.
Yes.
So, I mean, a lot of turns you'll roll... You might even roll like a 2 or a 12 and nobody will collect anything and pass to the next player.
Right.
Other times you'll roll, collect one resource, but that won't change anything for your own hand, so it passes to the next player. But then again, if it's that fast-paced for the average turn, then yeah, a robber could slow down the game, you know, significantly mm-hmm. Compared to a normal turn.
And on the one hand, there is a benefit of the robber being on the most likely number, which is the fact that you get to steal a resource from an opponent straight up
mm-hmm.
means that it gives a bit more of a likely chance for the player behind to catch up by stealing resources.
Or at least it allows whoever is rolling the number to steal from the guy in first.
Right.
And so because the guy in first is always getting, you know, taken down piece by piece, then that gives the person in last the ability to catch up
right.
a little better.
But at the same time, I'm not sure I like the whole idea of 7 being so common and the robber being on the 7
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that...
That 7's a lucky number and it's a...
No.
It's aesthetics, right?
Aesthetics, but the main thing is that since it cuts the amount of cards in your hand by half,
uh-huh.
it means that, for one thing, it can just ruin your plans for whatever you're trying to do. But it also does increase the length of the game significantly.
Okay.
Not by time taken in a turn, but by the fact that it will most likely mean that you are less likely to finish your next settlement or city,
mm-hmm.
and less likely to get points quicker, and it just makes the game drag on that much longer.
For example, somebody in first might not have a good resource to gather stone or wheat, but mm-hmm. they do maybe have a lot of good settlements and cities on... Like, just say sheep, for example.
Yeah.
So they start collecting a lot of sheep that they're eventually going to trade into stone and wheat. But if the 7 comes up too often, then they constantly have to either trade away the sheep that they have that they're trying to save up for trade, or they have to discard their extra stone and wheat, which they probably can't.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that can kind of draw out the end of the game. Maybe to an annoying length.
Exactly.
And part of good game design is you want the game to end before the players want the game to end.
Right. You don't want the game to overstay its welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. You want it to understay its welcome. You want it to stop way before people want it to stop.
And get them wanting to play it again.
You want them to play it again and learn the strategy. But that being said, Catan is still a decent game. It's a good gateway game.
Yes.
I think I'm proud to accept Catan as the monopoly of strategy games.
I mean, you know? I'm proud to accept it too, because it's a good replacement for that. It's the perfect game to put on that pedestal,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the perfect game.
No, it's not the perfect game. But it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
I played it a couple days ago. I wouldn't mind playing it today.
Again. That's fair.
Yeah, it's fun enough,
mm-hmm.
especially with the right people.
Yeah,
and that's sort of what board gaming is all about.
The right people,
playing games with friends, having fun, socializing.
All right, that was episode 1 of our podcast and episode 1 in our Gateway Game series about Settlers of Catan. We are also releasing episode 2 at the same time, so why don't you go check that out right now? You can follow us on Twitter at BG Bros Cast and on Facebook at BG Bros Cast if you want updates on when episodes release, or if you just want to hear our random day-to-day thoughts about game design and whatever. We also have a website. That's bgbcast.com. We post our podcast episodes there, and we also have a blog and a little bit more about us as game designers. Our podcast is published through Audio Boom. So if you want to find the new episodes, you can find them there, or you can just find them on Apple Podcasts. We're going to try and get it also up on other podcasting network, but for right now, those are the two places you can find it. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we are professional game designers. We work with our friends Chris and Roger, who have the podcast Entertain the Geeky. And at their website, entertainthegeeky.com, you can purchase our very first game. It's a one-page RPG called Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. It's kind of got like a Stephen King horror theme to it, but it's a real simple game, real fun to play around the Halloween holidays, which this obviously is pretty far from, but fun game either way. So you can find that game at entertainthegeeky.com. They had a little problem with their commerce, so hopefully by the time you check it out, it is up and running. And if it's not, well, I sincerely apologize, but I hope that you come back later and check out the game anyways. And you can go ahead and check out Chris and Roger at their own podcast, Entertain the Geeky. They release about 4 episodes a week, which is pretty impressive. And one of them is Nerd News, where they have their buddy Jason goes over the news of the nerd culture. Or you could just listen to their regular episodes where Chris and Roger rant about a lot of stuff. They're some pretty funny guys. They got pretty strong nerd opinions. It's always a treat to listen to them. All right. Thank you so much for listening to our episode, though. And please check out the next one, episode 2, where we talk about Dominion. Have a good one.